afternoon, Met fans, and welcome back to a very special edition of the Terry Collins Show presented by Tunnel to Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi. The Mets have taken a well-deserved break for the All-Star Game week, so the team actually has a good 4 days off before they head back to Citi Field, and they'll kick it off this Friday at Citi Field with the Cincinnati Reds series, but everyone's waiting for July the 19th, that's Saturday, when it's David Wright Day at Citi Field. And today's episode is going to focus on the captain number 5, who will not only be inducted in the Mets Hall of Fame, but have his number retired during the upcoming ceremonies. I'll be there and looking forward to it. And in our leadoff, David's former skipper and dear friend Terry Collins will be there as well. Terry joins us for the leadoff, so let's welcome him right now. All right, we're here with Terry Collins down from Florida. And Terry, it's a big week for one of your favorite players and friends, David Wright.
Yeah, it's truly going to be an honor to be up there and be amongst all of the other fans and a lot of his former teammates to honor David. If there's one guy who deserves this special honor, it's David Wright.
Yes, it certainly is. And all the festivities the Mets have put together, I know you're flying up really early, and they have you booked, like, literally several times a day. I mean, tell us about some of the things that you're going to be doing before this ceremony takes place on Saturday.
Well, I've got some other functions that I'm going to do. I'm going to do a couple of SNY shows, and I've got some things at Citi Field. I'm going to do a Q&A with Bobby Valentine and I, which I'm looking forward to. I love being around Bobby. But on Friday, it's going to be pretty busy. I've got a show with David and Jose Reyes that we're going to do. And then later that night, we have a get together with a number of David's friends. And I'm looking forward to that. And then Saturday, it's get to the ballpark early. And, I'm excited for Tony Carullo, who, was the visiting clubhouse manager for so many years at Shea Stadium and Citi Field. He's also being honored, and Tony's a very, very close friend of mine. He, matter of fact, lives down the street from here in Florida. So it's going to be a huge day for us on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be one of the most historic number retirements and Hall of Fame inductions in Met history with David. And this individual who on and off the field just showed to everyone playing hard, grinding it out, being a leader, and off the field, just doing so many incredible things for everyone that he meets. One of the nicest guys out there. So I know you're very busy. There's also a documentary that SNY is debuting this week as well. Do you have an idea of some of your former players or some of the others that are going to be at the ceremony on Saturday? Of course, yourself, Jose Reyes. I'm sure there are several others.
There's going to be several others. I mean, I know David's invited some guys. I know Josh Satin's coming. I think Murph's coming. I know Jose's going to be there. You know, I read the other day that Jay Bruce is going to come. I know that Michael Kadire is going to be there. So there's going to be a number of guys, and I am sure there's going to be a lot of guys who are just saying, hey, look, I want to be a part of this. They're going to come on their own, which, again, is just a tribute to the fact that David Wright was not just a great player but a great person and a big, big piece of the Mets teams for so many years that I know there'll be a lot of his former teammates there.
Yeah, Josh is an interesting story because David met Josh. He was a rookie. It was 2011, I believe. And the New York Post had a very comprehensive column today by Mike Vaccaro called All the Right Moves. And Josh shared a story, which I don't even know if you know or not. You may. But when he was a rookie, rookies don't have these fancy cars. And, the guy was getting ready to go on the 7 line to head back to Manhattan. And a car pulls up next to him as he was walking to the train. And the window opens and it's David Wright. And he goes, hey, where you going? And he goes, I'm heading back to the city. He goes, get in. So he took him to the city. And that was something that Josh never forgot as a young kid. But that just kind of talks about David. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention to you was that David Wright never discarded his uniform on the floor. he learned, he read something about the old Negro Leagues, where these ball players that were blessed to be playing baseball would always take care of these uniforms and not let anything happen to them, not let them fall, discard them. And David took that, and he used that throughout his whole career, that he never let his uniform top drop to the floor. He'd put it on a hanger and put it in just for the respect of the game. And that's the type of guy David Wright is.
Exactly. That speaks volumes of who he is and what he's about. You know, I am not at all surprised that he did what he did with Josh Satin. You know, David never forgot where he came from. And there was a time when he was a rookie that, you know, the veterans, you know, years and years ago, they used to, you know, these guys would get called up and there'd be a veteran who would buy you a suit, because back then, you traveled in suits. And so those kind of things, David never forgot those. And he continued those ideas. And so here he is picking up a guy who just got called up to the big leagues and, you know, gave him a ride back to the city. But, you know, they were teammates. It didn't matter how long, David maybe knew the guy, whether it was part of spring training or whatever it might be, but they were teammates. And David honored that. He respected that part of the game. And, the jersey story. Again, how many people do that? I mean, how many people actually respect the game that much that it means so much to them just to take care of their uniform? But that's why the guy is being honored. That's why so many people want to be a part of it. His impact on his team and the game itself, we're not going to run into a lot of guys like that.
No. One of a kind, David Wright. Have you spoken to him recently over the last few weeks or – Have you?
Well, you know, it's like everything else today. You know, it's about texting. So,
yeah. Not communicated.
And I know he's getting enough calls from all the people with all the functions he's got to do in New York. He hardly needs to get another phone call. So, yeah, I've been in contact with him, looking forward to seeing him. And, you know, I just hope, John, I hope he understands, you know, there's so many things that he's going to be asked to do. And it's his week. And I'm going to try to, you know, I'm going to enjoy Saturday. I'm going to enjoy Friday night being around him. But, you know, those other things, I think it's David's time to shine.
Yeah, it is. And what I really loved about this entire thing also was that there have been just one other player before David that had his number retired and was inducted into the Hall of Fame on the very same day. And you have to go back to Tom Seaver. So there's only been two, and David is one of the two. So I think it's going to be a wonderful week. For David to get these accolades that he richly deserves. And I'm sure you're very thrilled about being able to participate in it. And Terry, I'll be up there this weekend myself. So I guess I will see you on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, you certainly will. Hope to see him before that. Take care.
All right, Terry. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to see Terry, and I know what a busy week he has this week and the conversations that he shared with us right here on the show, but also in some private conversations with him. He is going to be everywhere, and I know he's going to have a ton of fun just seeing some of his old players, and that ceremony on Saturday is going to be off the chart. I'll be there, as I mentioned. I'm going to try to capture some content for the podcast. I was able to get media credentials for it, so I'll have my setup there, and hopefully we'll have some really cool video to share with you on our next episode. But let's go to tell everybody about Tunnel to Towers and give you some updates from our presenting sponsor, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Three wounded service members will be the latest recipients of specially adapted mortgage-free smart homes this week, courtesy of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Tunnel to Towers is honoring the men for their service. All three homes are in the foundation's Let Us Do Good Village in Florida. If a service member or first responder is catastrophically injured, T2T will provide them with a mortgage-free home suited for their individual needs. For more information, go to t2t.org. And on June 29th, two Idaho firefighters were ambushed and murdered while responding to a wildfire. 3 days later, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation announced plans to pay off their mortgages. Both firefighters were married with children. This is part of the Tunnel to Towers commitment. If a first responder is killed in the line of duty and leaves behind young children, the foundation will pay off their family's mortgage. At a time of grief and uncertainty, Tunnel to Towers is giving the family stability and peace of mind. You can learn more about the foundation, once again, by going to t2t.org. And in honor of Independence Day, Tunnel to Towers assured the financial freedom for the families of 25 other falling first responders. They'll have a future without a mortgage. These home recipients live in more than a dozen states across the country. And since its inception, the foundation has delivered more than 1,500 mortgage-free homes. You can help these programs by giving just $11 a month. You can also donate a car or land. Please go to t2t.org. That's t2t.org. David Wright was the very first guest on the Terry Collins Show, and we've decided to pay tribute to David by giving you a chance to relive that moment in a Talking with TC Rewind. And we will play that for you right after this word from David Wright himself on behalf of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
I'm David Wright, former New York Mets third baseman, and I support the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. I've seen firsthand the great work they do helping our firefighters, our police, and our soldiers and their families. T2T is asking for your support for these brave men and women. Just $11 a month will go a long way and make a big difference. Go to t2t.org to find out more. Let's go Mets, and let's do good together.
Oh, that's my Prime delivery.
What, already?
Only one thing can match the buzz of Prime's fast delivery, and that's the buzz of Prime's entertainment.
What are we watching?
Heads of State, that new action comedy with Idris Elba as the Prime Minister, John Cena as the President, and Priyanka Chopra Jonas as their only hope.
Looks like a blast.
From fast delivery to explosive entertainment, it's on Prime. For only $8.99 a month, join now. Content includes limited ads, subscription auto-renews. For more information, go to amazon.co.uk/prime.
But now it's really time for the first ever Talking with TC, and we're excited about this one. So let me talk to you, everybody out there, and you'll know who this is once I get into it. Our first guest on Talking with TC played his entire career with the Mets organization, 7-time All-Star, 2-time Gold Glover, 2-time Silver Slugger Award winner. His 1,585 games with the Mets are the second most in franchise history, just behind Ed Cranepool. And he ended his career holding the franchise record for hits, runs, total bases, doubles, RBIs, walks, sac flies, and extra base hits. He got the nickname Captain America after the 2013 World Baseball Classic, hitting .438 in that tournament. But to the Met fans, he's simply known as the captain. It's an honor to welcome David Wright to the Terry Collins Show.
Thanks for having me. You forgot leader in strikeouts, probably errors, and probably a lot of other things too. So I feel honored to be the first guest. So thanks for having me, TC.
Well, David, it is without a question an honor to do my first show and have you be the first guest. I mean, it's very cool. Our relationship is great, but you know, it was so fun to watch you play for so long. And, you know, I just thank you for coming on the show and get kicking off this initial podcast that I'm going to try to do this year.
Well, you know, you're the best and, you know, I'd do anything for you. So thanks for having me. And I'm excited to talk some baseball. Let's do it.
Yeah, I think we should. You know, David, as we were getting ready for this podcast and of course, we were trying to discuss who was going to be on. And I said, you know, we got the ideal guy and I know he'll be on. And I said, you know, there's some things I've always wanted to ask you that I never really did ever get to ask you. And that, you know, the one was, you know, when you got first to the big leagues, when you got called up the first time, you know, every rookie, you know, he comes up and his eyes are, you know, big and he's so excited about being there. What guy in that clubhouse made an impact on your career when you were first got to the big leagues?
That's a great question. And there's a lot of them, but there's actually two that I've talked to in the last 2 days. So they come to mind, and that's Joe McEwing and Cliff Floyd. Those two guys for me took me under their wing. Joe, I lived in the same apartment building as Joe. He'd take me to the ballpark. He taught me how to get to the ballpark. This was before all the GPS and all that stuff. So I remember sitting in his passenger seat of his rental car, writing down directions as we're going, you know, over the Triborough into Queens and take exit so-and-so and make a right here and a left here. And then obviously Cliff Floyd really, really took care of me. He taught me that you have 2 ears and one mouth for a reason, to listen twice as much as you talk and to take it in. Cause I had a veteran group and a lot of those guys gave me a little bit that I tried to take from each of them, whether it's Al Leiter, John Franco, Mike Piazza, you know, and tried to apply it to my game. So I had a very veteran group, but those two in particular really took me under their wing.
You know, Dave, was there one thing, you know, as you're getting ready to play, was it the game prep? What was it that you took from them that you then initially gave to some of the guys when, you know, when you were the captain, or those young kids that were coming up, they're maybe still there today, that you said, hey, look, this is a piece of advice that I got my first year. I've never forgot it. And you related to them. Anything come to mind?
I remember being an 18-year-old, my first spring training, semi-fresh out of high school, and, you know, eyes wide open, bushy tail, just so excited to be in Port St. Lucie for my first minor league spring training. And I remember we used to have early work, and we'd get there at the crack of dawn, you know, maybe 6:30, eat breakfast and have our early work, say starting at 7, which is early for a baseball player. And, you know, I remember walking out to the backfields and hearing this commotion going on one of the backfields. And I'm like, man, what is that? So I like being places early. So I mosey on back there and I see Mike Piazza, you know, arguably probably the best hitting catcher of all time, Hall of Famer, working on his catching at 7 o'clock in the morning on a backfield in Port St. Lucie in February or early March in spring training. And that always stuck with me. And I always told myself, if Mike Piazza can go work on his defense at 7 o'clock in the morning in spring training when he's already at Hall of Famer, you know, I never can say that I'm good enough. I always need to keep working. And that lesson stuck with me.
You know, that is impressive. And that's, you know, that's one of the, we'll probably get into it shortly, but that's where, you know, my time when I go back now and I watch the minor league kids practicing and stuff, and, you know, that early morning stuff comes early, but, you know, there's no replacement for working. And that's where, you know, I've always thought, you know, your game prep was off the charts great. And you never missed a day. You never missed a workout. You never missed, you know, as you got ready for the season. I remember, you know, we sat down one of the first days and we talked about how many at bats you needed for spring training. And even in spring training, you said to me the one time about, you know, hey, look, I got to go back to back. You know, you don't need a day off every other day. I need to go back to back once in a while. So, you know, those are things that as a manager, you know, you hear your star player talk about, hey, look, I want to work hard. That's the stuff I think that, you know, plays that runs throughout the entire organization.
And let me say this quickly. I remember Terry Collins running the minor leagues for the Dodgers when I was in the minor leagues for the Mets. And I remember that enthusiasm. And I remember looking over at the Dodgers organization and thinking, you know, wow, this is big time. And it starts with Terry Collins, who's running the minor leagues, running from field to field. And that's why I was so excited when we hired you as manager. I wanted that enthusiasm. I wanted that excitement, because I remember as a young kid seeing you kind of set the tone in that spring trainings, or whether it's minor league games in the middle of August in, you know, whatever town when it's a million degrees. You know, I remember you setting that tone, and that's why I was so excited, you know, to not only play for you, but to learn from you and kind of bring that enthusiasm to the big league level.
Well, I'm going to jump in on that No, go ahead, Terry.
No, I was just going to say, so David, you know, as we get into this, and John, if you want to add something, please jump in, because, you know, the one thing about him, we're going to get how he feels, and he's not going to pull any punches with us, I can tell you, so.
No, no, really, because when I hear David talk about him seeing you run the minor leagues, running spring training for the Dodgers, because I always loved seeing the interaction between you and David on the field during your tenure and David as a player. And this question was really for both of you. It was the first one I had for you guys. It's like there's no doubt about the mutual respect, the admiration you had for each other. And I wanted you to both talk about that bond and how it's endured to this very day. David first, and then to you, Terry.
Okay.
Well, I think one of the things that always stuck with me, you know, besides Terry's enthusiasm and his upbeat, positive attitude, has always been that he had this open door policy where, you know, once a month, once every couple of weeks, he'd gather the veterans and we'd go in his office and we'd have kind of a state of the union per se, where Terry would be like, hey, give me what's going on in the clubhouse. Give me how you're feeling. Give me, you know, what I could do better, what we could do better, you know, both baseball wise and off the field, the culture in the clubhouse. And that's something that having that open door policy and that line of communication with your manager, I think is one of the most critical features. Maybe even more so than teaching the game of baseball is being in touch with your players and taking their temperature every now and then as to how things are going, because inevitably you're around these guys so much that you're going to get in these little spats or these little arguments or these little fights. And the reason for these meetings is to kind of come back together and say, okay, let's hash it out. You know, if we got some issues, whether it's with, you know, the third baseman or the manager or the star pitcher, whatever it is, let's hash it out behind closed doors and figure it out and let's move forward. And I think that that's something that I always appreciated with Terry, is that open door policy and that ability to communicate with all the players.
Well, you know, John, I will tell you, the first time I met David, I had been hired as the field coordinator, and I came down to Florida in January to get ready. We opened up the complex here for guys, and I was having dinner one night, and this guy comes over and he said, just wanted to introduce myself. I'm David Wright. And I'm thinking, wow, this guy came over to say hi to me. That's pretty impressive. This is the star player. And that struck me so, I was so impressed by that he would take the time just to come over and introduce himself, because, you know, he's a star. He didn't need to have to worry about that. But it was how he went about things after that. You know, when David talked about the open door stuff, you know, there were times during a season where I knew I had to get this guy a day off. I mean, he's always played 155 to 161 games, 62 games. So I don't know, every couple of weeks I would call him off. I'd come off to the side and I'd say, hey, look, I got to get you a day off this week. And he would say, what are you thinking? I'd say, well, how about Thursday? And who's pitching? And I told him, well, maybe this guy. And he would say, I'll tell you after the game on Wednesday. Because that's his love for the game, his passion to play for the game. And that's what made for me, you know, this guy, he didn't want days off. He wanted to be on the field. He knew his worth to the ball club. And he just, even though he knew he probably could use a day off now and then, he knew his importance to the team. And that's where I felt, you know, hey, look, the stars, they get it. They understand how important they are, and they're going to be out there. And this guy did it better than anybody else around. I mean, there were times that this guy played. I mean, the year he got hurt, he never said a word. He just showed up, got ready, and played good. And played. Finally, his neck was still stiff. He probably couldn't turn it anymore. But he just kept playing and playing. But I tell you, to get this guy a day off was tough, man. I mean, really tough.
You fought pretty hard, David.
You know, the other thing, John, I'll tell you the other thing I saw in New York. Every person that ever came in, if the community relations department or anybody else, the one guy they wanted to meet was David Wright. And so they would come in the clubhouse into the outside. They wouldn't come in the main clubhouse, but there was a little room off to the side, and they'd come in and say, hey, David, I've got Joe Blow out here. He wants to meet you. And every time David grabbed the 30 seconds to a minute and went out and said hi to the guy. Now that's respect for the fans and for the game itself. And in that town, it played without a question.
Hey, I remember when my nephew was, I think, 5 or 6 years old, we went to a game in Atlanta at the Westin Buckhead, and he saw David on the steps going up to where the Palm Restaurant was there in Westin in Atlanta, and he goes, that's David Wright. I was like, well, I'm sure, you know, he'd say hello to you. And he goes, I'm afraid. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I just said, David, do you have a second? And you came down and you took a picture with my nephew, and he'll never forget it, and that was just so memorable. But yeah, what a great, everyone wanted to say hello to David. And David, I don't know if you know this, or even Terry, if you know this, we're taping this on March 21st. And on March 21st, 2013, 11 years ago, David, do you have any idea what happened that day? Or should I refresh your memory?
I mean, I have a feeling that this day had something to do with being named captain.
That is correct. on this day in 2013, you were named the fourth captain in the history of the New York Mets. Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez were co-captains in the 80s. Johnny Franco, captain from 2001 to 2004. You became captain in 2013. What did that mean to you at that time? And I want to talk to Terry about that too. I want to get his opinion on that. And what was that appointment of captain
What did that mean for you at that time? And what should the role of a captain for a team in today's era be?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because every time you bring that up, it brings a big smile to my face. And looking at Terry brings a big smile too, because he was the one that got that delivered the news to me. And one of the best days of my career, you know, certainly being viewed in the light of a, you know, a Terry Collins and his coaching staff and the front office and ownership and players in that kind of role was something that I took very seriously. And to this day, I feel like one of the biggest honors that I've ever received. So, you know, for to be viewed as a captain or a leader for the organization, for the city, for the fan base, for my fellow, you know, players, you know, was incredibly amazing. And you could see by the smile that it's something that, you know, I cherish to this day.
You know, John, I will tell you, I approached David that spring and asked him if he'd ever, you know, that I would like to name him the captain. And he said, I don't think so. And I said, well, think about it and get back and we'll talk about it again. So we talked about it later. And he said, before we talk, I want to go find out about with my teammates, how they would feel about it. And that is why, one of the reasons why I wanted him to be the captain. I didn't want him to make speeches. I didn't want him to have to get up in front of the club and give a pep talk. I wanted him to lead by example. You've already heard about him talk about, you know, that he's on the field, an all seven-time All-Star at 7 o'clock in the morning in the cage, taking ground balls, his respect for the fans, signing autographs, taking a picture with your nephew in a hotel on the road, the respect for the media in New York. You know, always available. And there's a lot of places you won't find this, but in New York, you have to be in front of your locker when that game is over. This guy's in front of the locker. You know, he answered the questions. He answered them properly. His respect for his teammates. I mean, all of those things are what, for me, is what leadership is. It isn't about how good a talker you are. It's about how you go about things. And, you know, and I used to ask David, hey, can you talk to so-and-so? Because I thought his impact as a peer player had a lot more clout when he would talk to a player about an issue as opposed to the manager. You know, the players get tired of hearing the manager talk. But when you have someone that's locker next to you who's going through the same things you're going through, who's been through the same things you're going through, you know, it means a lot more. And this guy never said no. And that's why he was, for me, the ultimate captain.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
And today's day, captains, there are not very many of them, really. And I know the Mets have several guys. Well, maybe this guy should be a captain. Lindor shows his leadership abilities. Of course, Pete Alonso is the you know, kind of the face of the organization. What does the role of a leader mean today? I mean, has it changed? You think the role has changed if someone is appointed captain today in comparison to when, David, you were playing?
You know, I think for me, it was something that I never wanted to do different. You know, I think that I was honored with that title for a reason, and I didn't need to change something or become all of a sudden this boisterous, loud, speech-giving motivator that, you know, just really wasn't me. There was a time and place to, you know, get on somebody, or there was a time and place to hold a team meeting and to get up and say a few words, but I always respected and followed the types of players that didn't do that very often, because when they did do it, it meant a lot more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I reserved that for, and Terry and I talked about it before. You know, we'd go through a stretch where we just stunk, and, you know, I'd look at Terry and be like, hey, you know, how you feeling? You know, you think now's a good time? And we'd have that dialogue. And that's what made it so great, is that, you know, I wanted to hear what Terry thought as well. And, you know, when, you know, I accepted that role as captain, you know, I wanted to lead by example. And I think that I made it a point to even try to do that harder, you know, once I was named captain, because I wanted these young guys that came up in New York to not necessarily, you know, follow me because I was loud and boisterous and yelled in front of the cameras, but I wanted them to follow me because I tried to be the first one to get my work done. I tried to be the first one in the weight room. I tried to be the first one, you know, out on the field for stretch. I tried to, you know, make sure that these young players saw me get my work in and followed that example to be on time, to play the game the right way, to, you know, to be courteous, to, you know, do the things away from the field that you're supposed to do. So, you know, that was very important to me. So that would be the role that I foresee other organizations or this or the Mets organization, you know, when naming another captain or the next captain is, you know, somebody that is genuine, somebody that's organic, somebody that's doing it for the right reasons, not just because there's a camera in front of their face.
Mm-hmm. You know, John, and I think what David's come from is very true, but, you know, we all make it sound, make it a little bit sound like, you know, he was all, I mean, which he was all business, but you know what he did? He lightened up the clubhouse. This guy is a fun loving person. Don't let him kid you. As dedicated as he was to his job, he made the clubhouse fun. You couldn't walk in the clubhouse without having two or three guys sitting around him, and they were laughing. They were laughing about something. I mean, and so he lightened up the entire clubhouse. I mean, if there was, you know, he's the one who said, "Hey, we need the belt." We, you know, that year he went out and got the belt that we gave the player of the game, and guys enjoyed it. They enjoyed coming in the clubhouse, and I've talked to you before, John. You know, I used to be in the clubhouse a lot. Probably more than I need managers should be, but I enjoyed being in there. And every time I was in there, and if he got up to move, three guys turn their heads to see what's he going to do. And that to me, and again, this the example that he set. And I'm not sure players today, you know, understand that. I really don't. They're so caught up. There's so much media and social media and all the other things, you know, and it's when behind those closed doors are where it plays, where, you know, you hang that ego on those doors before you walk in that room. And that's what I think, you know, David did. And I'm not sure today's players are like that. And I just think he learned that as he came through, but you know, you got to have fun at the ballpark, and David created fun in our clubhouse.
Yeah.
And that's actually a great point. And, you know, by Terry is that I do think that, and Terry and I've had conversations about this, and, you know, I think we came to a point where we said, you know, an hour before game time at home, there's so much downtime. You get there so early, you got batting practice first. There's a lot of downtime in between batting practice and the game. And, you know, it's inevitable that players are going to pull out their phones, or players are going to want to play cards, or players are going to want to, you know, we had a little mini basketball hoop that guys would shoot from in the clubhouse. You know, it's inevitable that guys are going to want to do this. But I think that, you know, like Terry said, you got to have fun, because in the grand scheme of things, it's a bunch of big kids playing a game for a living. But, you know, we agreed that, I think it was an hour before the game, that stopped. And we started preparing, going over game plans, going over video, starting mentally prepare for that game. So I think that there is a, like Terry said, which I think is often overlooked, that camaraderie, you know, that, hey, after a tough loss, let's go out and grab some dinner after the game, and let's talk some baseball, or let's talk like, hey, what's going on? You know, just to free things up so that when we come back to the field the next day, we're playing for one another. I know that the guy to the right of me, you know, is having a baby, and that's stressful, and that he's not getting much sleep at night. And therefore, you know, we're pulling in the same direction, and that we have that unity because we know each other, not only as players, but we know each other away from the field as well.
Yeah, you both of you have seen changes in the game, obviously, and there's, you know, there's generational changes that have happened in baseball. A lot of young guys that are coming in. What changes have you both seen with some of the younger players that are getting into the game now compared to your era?
Well, for Terry's case, they're starting to wear helmets now.
That wasn't funny, dude.
I know. You go first, Skip. Go for
well,
it.
Well, you know, obviously the game is changing. And so, you know, when I first came with coming up, and it's stuff I even taught when I was managing, you know, you talent plays, John. Talent wins. And so what you try to do is you take that talent and try to teach them how to win and the importance of winning and how to win baseball games. Sometimes you got to pass the baton to the next guy. And Now it's all everything's wrapped up in what each and every guy does, what his numbers dictate. I mean, I have spent a couple of years when I left managing the Mets, I went through the minor leagues and you know, the analytics started to come in and guys were more concerned about their numbers than how they executed stuff on the field. And I mean, this past last year, I watched a lot of minor league games, and after the games, I would talk to some of the guys, and they're saying, "Well, geez, my exit velocity was down." Well, you didn't make contact three times, so why don't we start working about, you know, a two strike approach to put the ball in play, and so maybe that stuff changes. But because that is what everybody looks at now, that they've gotten away from the ultimate thing, and that is in our game is to win at the major league level, and for me, that starts in the minor leagues. And so these young players, you know, do they learn how to win in the minor leagues? I'm not sure, because everybody downplays winning in the minor leagues. When I was a minor league manager, you know, I got accused, "Hey, look, you want to win too much." I said, "Yeah, when that guy goes to the big leagues, when my player gets to the big leagues, I want him to be able to contribute to winning." Tom Lasorda did not care if what somebody hit in AAA until they got to the big leagues and they showed him they could help him win a baseball game. And I'm not sure today, and again, I don't sit in meetings in the minor league clubhouses anymore, but I just, when I watch the minor league game, it's not played the same. And I think there's a way that, you know, to get good players, talented players. And I'll tell you one thing, the guy that's on the screen right now, he wanted to win every night. He wanted to win. And when we didn't win, he tried to figure out how tomorrow we can win. And I don't think, I bet you could ask David how many nights he cared. How about, you know, I watched one game, he got a base hit to right field off Mariano Rivera to win a game. And I don't think he cared if it was 100 miles an hour or 25 miles an hour. It landed where nobody was at, and we won a game. And I think that's where, you know, the players today are kind of getting away from that and so worried about the stuff that's showing up on TV.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think that there is certainly a place for the analytics, and I think Terry did a wonderful job when he managed in taking the numbers and utilizing them. You know, I think knowledge is king. You know, if you have the knowledge of the analytics and the feel of a baseball mind that Terry had, you can combine the two and have a perfect marriage. And I think that that's what makes managers great and what makes managers relatable to the players is having that feel, but also having the knowledge of the analytics. But I'm with Terry 1,000%. I think that not only in the professional level, but at the amateur level and on down, that we're not teaching these kids how to play the game correctly. You know, I think that the game is changing to the point where, like Terry said, it's, you know, these different numbers when taking batting practice as opposed to working on a field that's going to be successful in the game. I think that the situation should dictate your mindset or the game plan that you bring to the plate per at bat. Every at bat isn't the same. There's going to be a time where you need to get a runner over. There's going to be a time where you need to get a runner in. You know, there's going to be a time where, hey, you're 3-1 sitting fastball, let it eat, you know, swing as hard as you can, you know, but that's not every situation. So I think that there needs to be a marriage between the two of that feel and that teaching the game correctly and playing the game correctly with the analytics.
Very good point. Yeah, there's so many changes today. But I'm going to go back in time for a minute, David. Your relationship with Jose Reyes. I can't begin to tell you how much joy the Met fans felt when you guys were both emerging. I mean, I've been a lifelong Mets fan since I was 9 years old. I went to my first game in 1966. And there's been a lot of ebbs and flows, a lot of ups and downs. We were so starved for stars, and you and Jose emerged at the same time. Really, you became stars. The fans loved you. One of my fondest memories was in 2006, seeing you and Jose celebrating on the field with the cigars, with the champagne, holding the signs. And that was just incredible that night. It was a lasting, lasting memory. And then, of course, you know, time passes. 12 years later, you're at your final game. And to your left, Jose Reyes is there. And what an emotional night it was for the entire city of New York. And to see you and Jose embrace when you were leaving that game was a memory that everybody remembers today. It'll live in everybody's memory in Mets history. What did Jose Reyes mean to you as a teammate, as a friend, and do you guys still stay in touch with each other?
Yeah, the short answer is that we're brothers. You know, I remember being 18 years old, Jose right around the same age, Guy Conte, who was running our minor leagues at the time, who's a good friend of both Terry and I's, pull us in the office. And I'm 18 years old. I think I did something wrong, or, you know, my mind is starting to race. Like, what is the boss going to say to me, or what did I do wrong? And he pulls us in and we start talking a little baseball. You know, we start talking amongst ourselves, and he ends the conversation with, "You guys are going to be the left side of this infield for a long time at the big league level." And I remember both of us walking out of that at 18 years old and like, wow, you know, we gotta, you know. And that made us want it even more. Having that relationship, having that confidence walking out that door of that meeting, you know, I'll never forget it. And from that day on, you know, it was almost like we wanted it together. We didn't want it individually. You know, we didn't want it for ourselves. We wanted it for each other. And that was the way that we played the game. You know, we went through a lot of ups, a lot of downs, but the constant was that Jose knew me just as well as I knew myself. I knew him just as well as he knew himself. And it was so funny how two kids from completely different backgrounds, speaking two different languages, eating two different types of food, listening to two different types of music, could bond at that level and have a brother-like relationship. So, you know, one of the best friends that I've had in the game. And it just is a comfort level. When I look to my left, I want to see Jose Reyes manning shortstop because I know where he's going to play certain hitters. That makes me play a certain place. And we don't even have to go over the scouting report. I know by where he's playing or what his body language is, he could communicate with me that way. And that's how well we knew each other.
Yeah, that chemistry was evident. And you just knew looking at you play. And that last game was just it was an amazing memory. It really was, Terry. Back to you.
Well, thanks, David. I'm going to let you go. I just want to thank you again for all your time tonight. You mean a lot to me. You mean a lot to this organization. Obviously, one of the all-time great Mets, and one of the all-time great players. And I know you're enjoying your time with your kids. You should have some fun. And I look forward to seeing you down the road here pretty soon. And again, thank you so much for being my first guest on my first show.
Well, you're the best, and at some point, my three-year-old boy, I'm going to send him down to Florida to have you teach him some baseball, you know, because I want him playing the game the right way. So thanks for everything you've done for, you know, my career. Thanks for, you know, being a friend, and hopefully I'll see you again soon.
Thank you, David.
So good to relive that first guest on the Terry Collins Show, none other than David Wright. And if we get lucky, maybe we'll have some video with David and Terry this weekend at Citi Field. That would be great, and we'll play it right here on the show. So David, whose amazing ceremony at Citi Field is just a couple days away, I can't wait to be there, as I said many times today, for that historic event. And now it's time for another Tunnel to Towers Amazing Hero of the Week. Let's go to that right now.
My name is Nicole Carduce, and my husband is Michael J. Carduce. He served in the Air Force for 23 years. I honestly grew up with Mike. We went on a date, and we got married 3 months after that. We have six kids. They all remind me of him in different ways, actually, and it's kind of beautiful. Mike and I were living on Andrews Air Force Base when 9/11 happened. Honestly, that day changed the rest of our lives. From then on, our whole world became very real. Mike was deployed twice in 2004 to Qatar, and then he was in Afghanistan. I'm very proud of Mike. He did what he was called to do. It was the man he was. Mike came to me in March of 2022 and said, "Can you feel these lymph nodes?" And they were swollen. On Thursday, he got a phone call that said, you have lymphoma, you're gonna need chemo, it's treatable. He died the next morning. After Mike died, they did an autopsy and his death certificate reads like an oncology textbook. It has all been contributed to him being in Afghanistan and the burn pits of Afghanistan. My biggest fears were, how do I financially support the kids? How do I emotionally support the kids? And how am I going to just keep our life intact? And then Tunnel to Towers paid off my mortgage on Veterans Day of 2023. I felt like I was seen, I was being taken care of, that my service mattered to somebody. It's life-changing. Tunnel to Towers Foundation, let us do good.
We will have another story from our presenting sponsor, Tunnel to Towers, on our next episode. And I want to make sure everyone checks out Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. Each week, Jay brings on guests from all eras in Mets history. Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz. And I'm sure this new episode that'll be coming out, and Terry mentioned that he's going to be up there taping with Jay. You could check out that and all of Jay's episodes on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. And we also invite you to subscribe to The Terry Collins Show on your favorite podcast platform, whether that's Spotify, Apple, iHeart, Odyssey, or wherever you consume your podcast. Go there, subscribe, and especially if you're on Apple, why don't you give us a 5-star review and write a short review on our show? That really helps. And if you want to see any of our content on video, all of our archives are at the Terry Collins channel. That's youtube.com/ The Terry Collins Show. You'll be able to see episode one to today's episode. Everything's up there on video. And each week we put together some highlights, and you could look for those as well. So please go to the YouTube channel, and you'll certainly be just swamped with great content from the New York Mets and the Terry Collins Show. And that's going to wrap up this edition. We want to thank our creative director, Marsh, and our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time right here at the Terry Collins Show.